Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, December 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this Tuesday edition of the show. Two guests join me on today's program. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Going to chat some NFL and some NHL with him. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join us. We'll chat college football and college basketball with him. So a great show coming your way here today on Bang the Book Radio. Over at BangTheBook.com, lots of great content, lots of great resources available for you. Please make sure you check out all of the bowl game previews that we've got. Obviously, five bowl games here in the rearview mirror with the NFL taking a break until Saturday. Got a whole bunch of college football games coming up Tuesday through Friday here. We previewed those on yesterday's show with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com. So definitely make sure you go back and listen to yesterday's show. That was a full hour with Kyle talking college football and college basketball. A lot of fun there with that one. But we've got basketball stuff over at BangTheBook.com here today. We've got NHL coming up as well. We've got situational betting articles. You name it, we've got it over at BangTheBook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Don't forget about the videos I've been doing over on our YouTube page, and also our first guest today, Brian Blessing, will likely have a couple of videos coming up here for us either today or tomorrow for that YouTube page as well. So you want to make sure that you're checking those out. And finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, where you can use that promo code BTB200 to get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man? Brian, your phone's cutting out a little bit there. Not sure if it's on our end or maybe on yours. But in any event, good to have you back on the Yeah, we're good now. We are all good. Thank you so much, man. Good to have you back on the program here. And week 16 of the NFL, Brian, we're almost to the finish line for the regular season and got a lot of playoff implications going on here this weekend. So a lot of very motivated teams.
Oh, it's just insane the way this is all shaking out at the end. I mean, throw a blanket over some of these teams, the Pittsburgh-New England thing. All of a sudden, I think in the AFC, can we make the case? Clearly, somebody can step up and get hot in the playoffs. But the Chiefs, the Chargers, Pittsburgh gets the win over the Patriots. But the New England stubbing their toe a bit. Is power starting to shift here slowly but surely?
Well, we got to keep in mind here too that, you know, when you've got these games with teams that are in must-win situations, you do generally see a little bit of inflation out there in the marketplace. I think maybe the Giants-Colts game has a little bit of that feel to it, with the Colts a 9-point home favorite. Of course, if Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't play, we saw what the Giants offense can look like in last week's game when they got shut out. But you know, you notice here that it looks like we've got a lot of people trying to guess the motivations of certain teams here this week. For example, Green Bay down from a 3.5-point favorite to a pick'em, and even in some places an underdog against the New York Jets. You know, a lot of, I want to say guesswork, maybe educated guesswork, going into the motivation levels for these teams this week.
Yeah, I mean, week to week, I mean, I would say to you on the two things you kind of discussed there leading into this, I don't think there was the inflation that should have been there on the Indy game last week with Dallas. I mean, Dallas got the win over the Eagles and had the cushion, and Indy is playing great football. And they were sitting there laying three with a really good defense. But their season was on the line in that game. Then the motivation aspect, you know, you're looking at a team like Atlanta, which is a mess. And you're like, well, have they run for the bus? Or, you know, is it going to be stat day and Ryan's going to light up Arizona and they're going to take it out on the Cardinals, which proved to be the case. But then there are others that just are rolling over and you're like, I don't know what I'm getting out of these guys.
All right, well, let's talk about a game on Saturday night where I think we know exactly what we're going to get from both of these teams, Baltimore and the Chargers. Chargers, 4.5-point favorite, short week for the Ravens, making that long cross-country trip out to California. Obviously, for Baltimore, a huge game for the wild card, for the division, which there's still, you know, a half game out there with the tie that Pittsburgh has. Huge game for the Ravens. Maybe not so much for the Chargers. Now, of course, they can win the AFC West. They'd certainly love to do that. But they're already in the playoffs as it is. So, you know, for the Chargers in this spot, you kind of have to walk the fine line between, do we want to go balls out for the division and the bye, or do we want to just make sure that, you know, with our already existing injury list, we don't make things too much worse. So I think it's a pretty interesting spot for a younger head coach in Anthony Lynn to have to go through here, trying to figure out what he wants to do this week with this Chargers team as a 4.5-point favorite.
I think the real Rubik's Cube for them will be in week 17. But if I'm thinking about the Chargers here, if Gordon comes back, you know, this team that's been playing great, showing a lot of heart and flying around with the ball, if Gordon comes back, well, then they're extremely lethal with both the running and passing game in the red zone. I would say this to you. If I'm the Chargers, I'm all in on this game, big time, because Kansas City's got to play on Sunday at Seattle. And Seattle's got to circle the wagons in that game, and that is a tough place to play. So I would think the Chargers are sitting there saying, hey, look, let's win this game and put some heat on Kansas City. So I don't think you're sitting there, you know, they're human beings. They know what the line is. They know who's playing who. I think they realize Kansas City has a potential banana peel out there Saturday, and that, to me, would really lead to the Chargers being all in on this game.
I do think something that's interesting, and I understand the value of getting a week of rest. I totally get that, and I totally understand why teams want to do that. But I also think that there's some merit to just continuing to play week after week after week. And I don't think that the teams really think that way. I certainly don't think the players think that way. They would love to have that bye week there in the playoffs to, you know, nurse some of those bumps and bruises. But you kind of wonder, with a team like the Chargers here, with how well they've been playing over such a long period of time, and again, we're thinking way far in advance here, I would kind of prefer the Chargers, if I had a futures ticket or, you know, really liked the way that they're playing here, I would kind of prefer that they have to keep playing as opposed to getting that bye week. But, you know, again, teams don't really think that way. They'd rather run the risk of, you know, of coming out flat as opposed to, you know, playing another game, having to win another game to win a Super Bowl, and then, of course, the injury situations as well. So I always find that dynamic interesting.
This one is really, really unique, Adam, in that the stakes are so high. I mean, you're talking about either being number one seed and home field through the playoffs or dropping to the 5 seed. I mean, the Chargers, they got to go and hope for the best. KC comes up short, probably specifically in that Seattle game. But, I mean, the stakes are big here. I mean, a 1 seed to a 5 seed have to play an extra game. There's a lot on the line here. And we know the Ravens desperately need the game. You throw the travel into it. And Jackson on the road, a very tough foe. And then the number in that dead zone, I mean, this thing could go back and forth. I think it could go up and down throughout the course of the week.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the fact that the Chargers can secure home field advantage, and not only that, but none of these teams are close to them. So, you know, if you don't have to travel here leading up to the Super Bowl, that's a fantastic thing for them. You're making everybody come out to you, definitely a little extra added incentive there for that one. And I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here, sort of throwing out, you know, some contrarian points of view to kind of get your take on them. I agree. The Chargers want to win this game. The Chargers want the number one seed. And also, too, I think the Chargers are very well positioned to win and cover in this game, because you look at Baltimore here, and yeah, it's great what Lamar Jackson's been doing, but who has Lamar Jackson doing it against? The Bengals, the Raiders, the Falcons, the Chiefs, the Buccaneers. None of those teams have good defenses. The Chargers don't have a great defense, but they've got two of the better defensive ends in the league that can kind of contain Lamar Jackson a little bit. They've got some good players at the second level on defense. This is the biggest test for Lamar Jackson here. I'm not sure he passes it with flying colors.
Oh, no. There's so many angles in play here that make it tough for the Ravens. The one thing I would say, what travels well in the NFL, and that's defense. So, I mean, you know, we're making all these cases for the Chargers here, but I would not discount, you know, that Ravens defense. And Rivers has been spectacular, but there are games still, you know, Phillip Rivers, sometimes he gets squirrely. Listen, that game they won the other night, I mean, it was so lost in the shuffle. And then, of course, I put it out on Twitter, and then all the Twitter knuckleheads come back. Oh, he knew what he was doing. They won. Well, if you remember, they're driving. They have no timeouts. There's 25, 26 seconds left, and he runs, and he gets hit. And, you know, slow it down, and it did kind of look like helmet to helmet. But they got no – they have a timeout. And he gets up, and he's yelling at the referee for 10 seconds. And then they called their last timeout. Well, I mean, they could have cost them two throws into the end zone. They got it in there. But, you know, Rivers is so emotional, and he still does some goofy things, you know. So, I mean, if Baltimore can bait him a couple of times and that defense can, you know, even maybe produce points, yeah, it's not like I'm completely discounting the Ravens' chances.
I think there are a lot of ways to go with this game. Like I said, I do like the Chargers a little bit just because of the step up in class for Lamar Jackson, but I completely agree with your point, and a very, very salient point at that, that, you know, defense does travel, and Baltimore does have a very, very good defense, which is, by and large, the reason why they're in this playoff hunt. I know Lamar Jackson has provided a spark, but, you know, even when you look at his game-by-game numbers, they're not off the charts ridiculous. He makes some plays, but the total package – you know, really doesn't look all that efficient to me. So that's why I am kind of looking at the Chargers a little bit in this spot. I may wind up on my Super Contest card for this weekend, but we'll see how things go when the numbers are released and also with the news throughout the week here on the Melvin Gordon injury situation. Let's go to game 103-104 here, Brian. Buffalo and New England. New England, double-digit favorite, laying 13 or so here against the Bills. There are some 12.5s, also some 13.5, 14s out there. Not a great look for New England last week, losing that game to Pittsburgh. They've lost five games here this season, the first time in a very, very long time that the Patriots have lost five games. In fact, they have to go all the way back to 2009 for that. The Bills, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs in that running back room right now. What kind of effort you think we get from them this week?
You get a really good effort. And this whole season, and I know we spoke at the beginning of the year, I said I thought the Bills win-wise would regress, but it was all about developing Allen, and the next year they clear $60 million of cap space. They get some offensive linemen and some wide receivers. To their credit, they get rid of Kelvin Benjamin, who was a complete and utter waste of time. I can't believe Kansas City went and got him. But they've got young wide receivers that are starting to step in and make a little bit of noise and at least be an open once in a while. The running game right now, it's a mass unit. But the defense, Adam, for this football team is really a really good story in the NFL. I mean, they got them to the playoffs last year. They've kept them in the majority of games this season. Go to the first game that was played between the two this year. The final was 25-6. It looks like a nothing burger. That game was 12-6 deep in the fourth quarter before New England got a touchdown and then a pick six to cover the number like in the last minute. If Josh Allen had played that game, Buffalo would have beaten New England. I mean, it was awful. Derek Anderson played. It was ridiculous. That Buffalo defense frustrated Brady. I think Buffalo, you know, shows up in this game, and I think, again, it's what we said at the beginning of this, that the power is starting to shift. It wouldn't shock me if the Bills' mindset here is, listen, this is close to the end of the road for New England. Let's send a message for next year. I think we're not going to be an easy out, and we think the future is bright. I think Buffalo shows up. I really, really do. And that defense, there have been times when Brady lights them up. But there have been games where they really frustrated him. And that first game, Brady did nothing.
Yeah, and you look at New England here, since the 2010 season, laying double digits against the AFC East, they are 13-2 straight up. but they're only 8-7 against the spread. So it's not like they're going out there and blowing out the AFC East teams when they're expected to in a big favorite role. Also here for the Patriots this year, unless they come up with two pretty big blowout wins, they are favored to get one here this week, and then we'll see what they do in Week 17. They have not had a point differential below 100 since the 2005 season. So maybe this is a case where New England just isn't as good as we've seen in the past, and they're laying a number that implies that they are. And maybe they prove it to me. Maybe they show everybody that they are that good. I'm not really ready to believe it, though.
No, I think you're spot on with that. In fact, we were watching the game last Sunday with a bunch of people. Bruce Marshall from the Gold Sheet, Andy Isco from Gaming Today was there, and we were talking. That was kind of the topic. Is you know, they used to get it done. I mean, you go back to the days with Troy Brown playing on both sides of the football. It's almost like, you know, plug in a guy here and, you know, they'll just get it done. But I think, you know, when Gronkowski's healthy, they're a monster because he is a red zone nightmare. It's sad almost. I mean, he's still a young guy, but I mean, Gronkowski just looks beat up and you wonder if it's the end of the road for him. But they do. They really do. They look like they're a different animal. And honestly, I could see the Bills stepping up to the plate here in the last 2 weeks, wanting to embrace the role of spoiler. I don't know. It looks like that Miami loss might really have hurt their chances. But, boy, if that game ever meant anything to Miami next week, they'll be walking into a buzzsaw up in Buffalo. But I do. I think the Bills do show up here. And the one thing is, they have not – this will be New England's defense, the first look at Josh Allen. Now, Allen still makes mistakes, but I'm telling you, with his feet, and they got a pretty unique design here where they're running 9 routes on the outside, open in the middle of the field. And if Allen breaks contain, I mean, there's a quarterback had over 100 yards rushing three of the last 4 weeks. So the funny thing is, Tom Brady this, Tom Brady that, and we get it. We understand why. But it's actually an interesting challenge for New England because the numbers may be pedestrian, but he makes – so many plays with his feet, it's a unique challenge trying to defend Josh Allen, and this is the Patriots' first look at him.
One more game I want to touch on with you here on the NFL side, Brian. Game 113-114, Houston and Philadelphia. Houston, a 1.5-point favorite at open. Now Philadelphia favorite out there in the marketplace, and I made a big mistake here. I don't know what the look-ahead line was on this game, but you know, Nick Foles and the Eagles going out and winning in L.A. against the Rams certainly has changed the perception of this Philadelphia team. All of a sudden, maybe Dallas a little bit scared about that precarious NFC East position. Philadelphia with that big win as a double-digit dog. Now they're a slight home favorite against the Houston team that a lot of people have been looking for reasons to bet against. What do you think about this game, which is now a huge one in the landscape of the NFL playoff picture?
Well, you know, what a difference 11 days makes. I mean, you know, Philly had a great case to beat Dallas and, you know, get that fortunate bounce and Cooper gets the touchdown, or Philly would have had the ball, A, that it covered, B, that it had the ball with a chance to go down and tie it or win it, but it bounced through the defender and into Cooper's hands and they score. But all of a sudden, you're looking at this wild card picture, Seattle stubbing their toe, has opened the door, you know, for the Eagles and for the Skins, and all of a sudden, here's a Philly team at the tail end of the year. You can say similar in one respect. I mean, Philly was home and cooled last year, but Nick Foles, late in the year, came in and gave them a spark, and Schwartz is a great defensive coordinator. Houston's got a lot on the line. I mean, Houston's sitting here, you know, with a shot to get a bye. And obviously send New England on the road. But Philly's sitting here circling the wagons going, hey, wait a minute. We're literally right back in this thing. They are the defending Super Bowl champs. And the running game for Philly is certainly for fantasy fans really frustrating. But all of a sudden, Smallwood comes off a big game. And don't sleep on what Darren Sproles does for the Eagles. In passing situations and the occasional runs, He may only touch it a dozen times, Adam, but Sproles has impact on football games. And I do think this is a different Philadelphia team with Sproles in the lineup.
It's just, it's so interesting. I mean, I don't think Carson Wentz was the problem this year for Philadelphia. I mean, you know, he wasn't great by any means coming off of the ACL. And, you know, I mean, maybe the team did kind of think that there should be a little bit more loyalty to Nick Foles after the Super Bowl run and after the Eagles decided to retain him here as their Wentz insurance policy. But it just looked different and it just felt different last week for the Eagles. And I do think to some degree as well, I mean, this said something about the Rams too. And we've been talking about the Rams here on the show that they have one concern, and it's the playoffs, and it's very clear at this point in time. But they do still have some defensive holes. They don't have a whole lot of depth at wide receiver. They've got their problems too. I wonder how people framed this Eagles win. And I think based on the betting market here, I think the Eagles are rightly getting the credit that they deserve.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm with you. And I would say this, in terms of Wentz, you know, you can say, well, was he 100%? Maybe in the first half of the season, no. Maybe never. But the one thing, when you watch the difference between Wentz and Foles, and it's always a pet peeve of mine. Honestly, right out of the gate, first series of every game or in the first couple series, I don't care who you are, go back and throw a bomb. I mean, that you have to make teams respect the pass downfield. And then it opens up passing lanes, even if it's incomplete and you punt. I'm telling you, if you watch Wentz all year long, you know, everything was a slant route or an out. Wentz didn't stretch the field. You know, Nick Foles, he's got a little gunslinger to him. The one thing Foles does is he'll throw it over the teams, to me, to open up the Eagles' offense over the course of 60 minutes.
I think it's an excellent point, and, you know, we'll see if he's able to have some success with that here. Against the Texans' defense that you can throw on, as long as you're protected and upright, you can complete some passes down the field on this Texans defense. So should be a real good game there in that one as well. And I'm kind of glad because, you know, at first I started looking at this NFL card, on Friday or Saturday and wasn't too impressed with it overall. And now, you know, the way that things have kind of fallen a little bit in terms of the playoff picture, there are a couple of games that, you know, draw my attention more than I thought they would. So hopefully we get a good Week 16 card here in the NFL. But Brian, I want to transition over
real quick, Adam, I would throw at you this. I would look under the total in that game. If you look, you know, the last couple of weeks, all right, okay, you get Dallas, the game at Dallas in Jerry's world, 29-23, and then the Rams game, gorgeous weather under the lights, 30-23. Now you're going to be going out, you're playing in gloomy Philadelphia, and you're back home, and everybody's remembering, oh, we're seeing these high-scoring games from Philadelphia. The weather could be a thing. And listen, I think Schwartz will do something to dial up to try to diminish Hopkins. I know it's, you know, easier said than done. But I think there could be a lot of moving the football, but teams really tightening it up once they get to the red zone, and maybe more field goals than you'd expect. I like the under in that game.
All right, good thought there to wrap up the NFL side. And let's transition over to the NHL, Brian. And I want to ask you specifically about one spot tonight. Then I'll get your overall thoughts on the card because we've got a very big NHL card here tonight. Last night, Nashville was in Ottawa. They lose that game as a -170/-175 favorite to the Senators. Tonight, they play the Chicago Blackhawks. And in the past, that would have been a major look-ahead spot last night for Nashville. And who knows, maybe they fell victim to it a little bit anyway. But Chicago is just a terrible team this year. A lot of problems with them. They fired Joel Quenneville. Things have not gotten any better for them. When you talk about these spots that used to be significant, like going and playing at the UC against the Blackhawks, what do you think it means now when you go in there and you're playing a Chicago team that just isn't very good?
No, I it's a fair point. I mean, Chicago's a mess, and they're getting old in front of your eyes. And, in terms of that, oh, boy, we're looking ahead to it. Especially, Nashville's walking in there. Well, they're looking forward to seeing us, and the fans are, you know, going to come watch us play. I think it's more of the scheduling situation with the back-to-back nights. And, back-to-back nights are really intriguing. There are just situations that are horrible. Sometimes back-to-back nights you get the road team, the home team is playing a game and then flying home for a team that's sitting there waiting for them. Sometimes those are goldmine spots. But you know what, Adam, you're looking at these scheduling things, and I really think it comes down to the quality of the team you're playing, the quality of the team that's involved in those scenarios. And don't sleep on the fact that, you know, a lot of these teams, there's some really good backup goaltenders. I think the goaltending is a lot deeper in this league than it's ever been, where I just don't know that the drop-off from the backup on a lot of teams is so significant. You just had and I'll just throw an example at you, and I just watched that scenario unfold where Buffalo played Washington, and it was a great game, and they lost in overtime, and then had delays, travel concerns, and then had to play a late afternoon game. It was ridiculous. It was a horrible scheduling spot, and the backup for Buffalo played Linus Olmark, and they went in, and Eichel went nuts, and they beat Boston, you know, less than 24 hours in a backup situation with their backup goalie. So I think to the degree you got to know what the drop-off is from the starter to the backup in those back-to-back situations. And frankly, Nashville, if you got a Rinne to a Saros, what's the drop-off?
No, that's an excellent point there. And I know you like to talk about backup goaltenders in terms of looking for adjustments on the totals. So I know that that's something that you pay attention to. And as you said, you know, maybe the backups are just a little bit better here this year, or, you know, maybe a growing trend where we've got some more goaltending depth league-wide. One thing I will mention here, I just ran a quick query that teams on a back-to-back against a team playing with one or more days rest, 52-68 here on the season so far. So the team in the back-to-back only winning 43.3% of the time against a rested opponent. We've got three of those games tonight, Ducks, Rangers, Predators, Blackhawks, Islanders, Coyotes on the card. And, you know, one of the other situations
we
should talk about, Brian.
I just want to jump in real quick. What were those numbers again?
Let me check. I actually just closed that tab.
It was
52-68 straight up, 43.3%. Teams in a back-to-back
right,
playing against an opponent with one or more days rest.
Yeah, but then you look at the units and you know, what was the number? And the number's inflated. I mean, so there are defined opportunities in some of those spots.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, you look at the Islanders tonight, and this is a doubly interesting game because Arizona's coming back off of a road trip. We isolated a spot on the show and on the videos last week about Arizona playing an afternoon game in Raleigh on Sunday. They lost that game 3-0. Now first home game back for them, but it's against an Islanders team with an outright upset last night in Denver, playing at altitude for the one and only time this season. So that's a really interesting game there. But, Brian, I do want to ask you here, from a situational standpoint, coming up here next Monday, the league goes dark for 3 days for the Christmas holiday, off on the 24th, 25th, and 26th. So as we look long-term here later in the week, are there any betting angles you're looking to take advantage of because that holiday break is looming?
Not so much because of that, Adam. I think it's the time you – and they talk about there's the trade freeze. Very rarely are there deals around the holidays. Even teams that are in disarray generally kind of take care of the players. I watched this league this year. It's almost like watching a baseball season. And you look at some of the streets that are out there. I don't remember this league you know, a team or two, but you're finding four or five or six teams at a time that are riding the wave of a streak. The Caps have won five, the Jets have won five, Calgary's won three, Anaheim, San Jose have won four. You know, the Kings are a disaster. They've lost four. The Flyers have lost four. Funny, it's almost like, you know, trying to identify where a skin's coming and get on board with it early. I think it's a little unique in that vein. And then the other thing, what I will tell you that I think is something I'll be watching for, somebody was just telling me yesterday, there are over 20 guys that are going at better than a point-a-game clip. I mean, that's crazy. But is that sustainable? I think you got the goalie equipment. We saw maybe some higher-scoring games across the board in the first 6 weeks. Then it slowed down a little bit. But equipment, or I don't care. You know, hockey's hockey, bud. It's the same thing every year. You get by Christmas. January's a little kind of sketchy. But late January, with the trade deadline looming, these games are going to change. These games are just going to become more defensive in nature. Teams are going to be scoreboard watching. You get a 2-2 game with 14 minutes to go, and it's a division game. I got news for you. These teams are playing dump-and-chase hockey, hoping to draw a penalty and maybe get a goal with special teams. But across the board, the mindset changes. The points, you know, in their mind mean more. And then coaches start working towards getting the team to play the right way, because that's the way you got to play when the playoffs get here. All these things that are new and different, shiny new toys, and analytics and all this stuff, good, great, good for you. I got news for you. It ain't never going to change, okay? The games are going to tighten up at the end of January.
One last thing I want to ask you about here, and that's the Vegas Golden Knights. They come off a four-game road trip, host the New York Islanders on Thursday. The Islanders playing a third road game in four nights off stops in Denver and Arizona. And then they take on Vegas. Of course, Barry Trotz returning to Vegas, where he won the Stanley Cup last year with the Capitals. What do you think about that spot on Thursday night for Vegas going up against the Islanders?
That's a brutal one, because you're right. The Islanders, three games in four nights. But then Vegas is playing the first game home from a long Eastern road trip, which can be a grisly game to play for any team. So there are, you know, chinks in the armor or fade opportunities for both of these teams in this spot. The one thing, and then there are subplots to the game. First of all, Marc-Andre Fleury, they've been riding the guy like Secretariat. Finally, he got a day off and didn't play the last game at the road trip. So Fleury finally got a bit of rest. But I will tell you, the subplot in here is Barry Trotz is coming in as head coach of the Islanders, and this was a guy that had a blueprint to beat Vegas. And the Caps did it in the final. They did it against Vegas this year. We've seen a couple of teams mirror that, and basically I would look for the Islanders to do the same thing. If Vegas runs around in their own end, if Fleury sees the first shot, he's going to stop it. But Trotz, they had a great scheme last year in the final, and that would be the Ovechkins of the world or Backstrom or whoever it was. They'd have a great scoring opportunity, and Adam, they wouldn't shoot. They would hold on to it, and then they'd make a cross-ice pass, cross-crease pass. They got Fleury on the move. I would look for Trotz to be, and they got guys that can light the lamp. Trotz is the X factor for the game in terms of what he dials up specifically to go against Vegas.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people catch those two shows, Brian?
KSHP.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Brian Blessing. And the shows are archived for you at SportsbookRadio.com. In fact, we'll have a little chat about the Islanders today. We'll have Brian Compton from NHL.com at 1 p.m. Pacific time talking about the Islanders on their road trip and coming to Vegas, so we look forward to that. And I'll be doing videos today. We'll do week 16 in the NFL. And Adam, I think we'll focus on the Friday and Saturday bowl games with one of our videos today for bangthebooks.com. Some players aren't playing. There are some bowls that are historically high scoring. And then there are subplots for motivation and a lot of ways to get after it. It's the last wave of the, I don't know what you call them, lower tier or middle tier bowls, and then things are going to really ratchet up. But they're good betting opportunities, and we'll focus on those games in that video today.
Definitely make sure that you go to YouTube.com, search Bang the Book, and go ahead and subscribe to that page, and it'll let you know when Brian's videos are up. Brian Blessing, Sportsbook Radio, Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Have a great day, buddy.
All right, there you go. There's Brian Blessing, again, Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Outline. And actually, in retrospect, I won't talk to him next week because that is a Christmas holiday. Won't be doing a show there on Tuesday. So we'll figure something out to maybe get those guys later in the week or something like that. In any event, we got one more guest here for this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going good, Adam. Thank you.
Good to get you back on the program here. I know you're a little bit under the weather, so you know, we'll get through this the best we can here today. And didn't get you on the show last week, Rolf. You had some things going on. But, you know, in terms of looking at the bowl results that we've already seen and sort of the impact that it's had in the betting market so far, kind of interesting to look at, you know, how some of these conferences are being rated based on what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I don't look that much into it. You know, you look at some conferences, and yes, when conferences play each other, you have the historic numbers, and some teams have done better or worse. You know, the MAC traditionally has been getting bashed in bowl games, and because they are just a weaker conference. But one thing to remember as we move on, since we won't be talking next week, is a lot of those rankings – for the major Power 5 conferences are determined on what teams make the playoffs. When the Big Ten had a team in the playoffs, you had the number 2 seed playing the SEC number 2 seed. With the Ohio State Buckeyes not in the playoffs this week, Ohio State, you have the number 1 slot playing the 2. So each of those are shifted. So a couple years ago, when you had Georgia and Alabama in there, the number 3 SEC team was facing the number 1 team from out of conference. So it's changed a lot with the playoffs at how many teams or what conferences have teams in the playoffs. So you have to be careful when you're looking at the history of those standings.
No, that's an excellent point there. Definitely glad that you brought that up. And with you, we're going to talk about the Saturday, December 22nd bowl games here, the Birmingham Bowl, Armed Forces Bowl, Dollar General Bowl, and then the Hawaii Bowl. One thing I do want to mention, an oversight on yesterday's show, and in fact, Kyle mentioned this to me right after we got off the air, that game in the Bahamas, FIU and Toledo, enormous totals move on that game, down from 68.5 or so all the way into the 61.5 range. Big time weather considerations for that game. 30 mile per hour winds, lots of rain potentially in the forecast there for that one. So again, with some of these bowl games here, and obviously Friday's other bowl game in Boise, Idaho, still got to make sure you're paying attention to the weather, because that's a very important thing that, you know, the teams really have to deal with in those types of conditions. So, Rolf, let's look at Saturday and let's talk about the Birmingham Bowl between Wake Forest and Memphis. Obviously, this one, as the name would suggest, in Birmingham. So not really any kind of home field advantage for either one of these teams. Wake Forest from the ACC, a stronger conference than Memphis in the AAC. Memphis still a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at Memphis, and obviously they've done what they've done, but they've done it with Daryl Henderson and, you know, 1,906 yards. So that's obviously a huge loss for them because Memphis's offense runs through him. You know, I tend to look at 6-6 teams. You know, something for our listeners, one of the biggest motivation tools I have, if I have a 6-6 team, is if they're an underdog, they're clean 63% against the spread. Why? Well, you have the entire offseason. Either you win this bowl game and you have a winning program and that goes down in your record books, or you have a losing program. So to me, one of the biggest motivators in these bowl games are 6-6 teams. So when I have an ACC 6-6 team, that's a bowl game that has, to me, I still believe he has a coaching edge. And I look at while they've given up a lot of yards per carry rushing, I think they're a live dog in this game with the matchups.
Yeah, when you look at this one here, you've got Memphis 3.5-point favorite, as I mentioned, total climbing from 73 to 75. I do like both of these coaches. I think Mike Norvell's done a fantastic job in Memphis. I also think Wake Forest, you know, obviously with Dave Clawson, a guy who's a very, very good head coach, underrated coaching matchup here, but I do think, you know, Dave Clawson does have a little bit of an edge. And I love that 7-6 thing. What was that six?
They're 20-12 since 2014, 62.5%. But even better, a 6-6 bowl team that won its last game to get in. That means You've been playing bowl football. You were 5-6. You have to win to get the bowl. You win that game. You're 40-21, 65.6%. That's 6-6 teams that won their last game to get to this bowl.
And keep in mind, too, when Wake Forest won that last game to get to a bowl, they pummeled Duke 59-7. And they also had that comeback win against NC State a few weeks prior to that. So, you know, for Wake Forest, a slip up at home against Pitt. Pitt was a pretty good team, and Wake Forest not a great rush defense. But, you know, two big road wins for the Demon Deacons to get to a bowl game. And also, you kind of wonder for Memphis a little bit here, too. I mean, their goal for the season was to win the AAC conference title game. They got to it. They got UCF with a backup quarterback and still gave up 56 points and lost that game. So you do kind of wonder about their mindset a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That has to be a letdown situation, blowing, I think, a 30-3 lead. So, you know, it's a situation where I think motivation, normally you don't think motivation comes from an ACC team against a CUSA team. In this, I really think it can be the case.
Well, one more thing here, too. Memphis defensive coordinator Chris Ball hired as the new head coach at Northern Arizona. So we've had some coordinators leaving their programs here as well. Obviously, it didn't really matter for Appalachian State and Utah State. They both won in blowout fashion. But, you know, we got some coordinators on the move here, taking FCS jobs and things of that sort as well. So you certainly want to factor that into your handicapping process. Let's go to game 224, the Armed Forces Bowl between Houston and Army. This one down in Fort Worth, Texas. Army coming off of the win over Navy. Commander-in-Chief's Trophy, winning streak over Navy continues. Now they draw Houston in the bowl game. What do you think about this one with Army laying 3.5?
Well, normally, I don't like a team going to the same bowl. If you remember last year, Army played and beat San Diego State as a 6.5-point dog, 42-35. But with Army, I think you are excited. They were worried about not getting to a bowl. The matches weren't lining up where they had a chance to not go bowling, which would have been ludicrous. So them going to a bowl, and obviously a bowl called the Armed Forces Bowl, I think you negate that same bowl experience back-to-back year. You look at Houston, they are a very powerful dog going 13-3-1, but fewer teams have bigger losses than they do, losing DeAndre King, their quarterback, and Ed Oliver. And they have three defensive linemen out of their two deep. They fired their DC as well, so they're going through a lot of processes. Despite that, they still have the extra time to prep for the option. I like this Army defense very, very much, and I think the game is going to lean to the under. You have the biggest discrepancy of all the bowls in time of possession. Army was number one in the country in time of possession. Houston was last in time of possession. I think that changes a little bit without the quarterback. I look for this to be a lower scoring Armed Forces Bowl.
Well, and you look here for Army, Jay Bateman, their defensive coordinator, getting hired by North Carolina to go work for Mac Brown. So a pretty strong hire there from Mac Brown, getting Army's DC, Jay Bateman. And, you know, again, these are the important things that you want to consider here. But even with that DC change, we've seen this total drop over a touchdown for this game here in Fort Worth. I could be wrong. I think weather was supposed to be a factor in this bowl game, so we'll have to double check that as we go throughout the week here. But, you know, the question for Houston here to me is without De'Aaron King, and, you know, apparently they're expected to have one of the better backups in the country in Clayton Toon, even though he's only completed 44.7% of his passes this year. The question for me is how efficient is Houston with a limited number of possessions? Because Army should dictate time of possession for the most part in this game. Houston's still going to move fast. Doesn't matter who's at quarterback. How efficient are they? That's the question. I guess it's a tough handicap, honestly.
Well, I agree. You know, as far as the game goes, you know, I am not surprised at all. If Army wins this game handily, Houston, you know, how excited are you? You know, you're 8-4. This isn't the bowl. And though Army's a 10-win team, you know, they're not perceived as being one of the biggest bowls. The kids from Houston, you have an in-state bowl. You know, how excited are you going to see an area you've probably been to 10 times? So, you know, while you may have a little bit of, your home support is going to be there because your family and friends can make the easy trip, you know, it's still going to be an army. It's still going to be an army crowd. We saw the military always draw well when they go there. So I could see Houston fading and Army winning this if I had to pick a side, and winning it by double digits.
Well, and as we look at the forecast here for this game on Saturday, no precipitation in the forecast. Should be nice and sunny, but it will be windy. Gusts up in the 20-mile-per-hour range. Obviously, that hurts Houston a lot more than it would hurt Army. Army probably doesn't have to throw a pass if they don't want to in this game. But Houston, you know, certainly would like to stretch the field and throw the football a little bit. Maybe the weather conditions prohibit that some, but winds expected to cut down a little bit over the course of the game. So maybe Houston in the second half can get that offense going as the wind chills down a little bit. All right, Buffalo and Troy in Mobile, the Dollar General Bowl here in this one. Troy with a shot to get to 10 wins, and that's where I want to start with this game. Troy is a short underdog here, but they have been the preferred side with the early betting action that we've seen, down from 3 to 2 or 2.5.
Yeah, and that's the side I would agree with. You know, you have another team here. You know, who knows? The Dollar General Bowl may be a better bowl to go to than going to Detroit as the MAC champion. But, you know, Buffalo's another team that's disappointed they didn't get the MAC title. You know, in going to a bowl is a powerful incentive. But in the MAC, I think it's more important to win the title because your bowls are all switched anyway. You do have Buffalo, that's a powerful 18-6-2 against the spread their last 26 games. But this is the first game for Lance Leopold, the head coach. You know, they're 0-2. They've only been to 2 bowl games in their history. They were a FCS team, you know, just over a decade ago. MAC teams, like we mentioned, MAC teams 1-10 straight up, 1-11 straight up now, 3-7-1 ATS in bowls. In Troy, powerful, powerful defense. Neil Brown, 2-0 straight up in ATS and bowls. This is a team that went to Lincoln and beat Nebraska. Troy is number one in special teams. A lot of people don't look at special teams ratings. Their special teams are awesome. And just an angle that doesn't have many parameters to it, but it's something I looked up just because it was unusual to me. And since 2006, only 15 times have a team scored 14 points or less in their last 2 games going to a bowl. Those teams are 11-4 ATS and 10-5 over under.
Well, and as we're talking here, we're seeing some Army money hit the board, 3.5s with extra juice, even a 4 out there. And it looks like somebody of pretty good influence out there did jump on Army for that game coming up here on Saturday. So just a little bit of
was
breaking
that you?
News
was
that
you, Adam?
Yeah, it was totally me. I wish I could move money like that, man. I wish all of us could, quite frankly. But that one is definitely one on the rise right now. And you know, I think this is another really good coaching matchup. Like that Memphis Wake Forest game, I think is pretty good. I think this one is exceptional with Lance Leopold and Neil Brown. I think the most surprising thing about this bowl game is that both of those guys are coaching it and didn't get hired somewhere else.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, the what Buffalo's done, you know, and they even did it without with some injuries. I mean, Jackson missed a couple games, and their receiver Patterson, who's going to be an NFL receiver, missed a couple games, and Troy just keeps doing it. You know, I think of the two, I actually think Neil Brown has the higher upside, but you know, Buffalo, you have the person who has the success in the lower divisions moving up, so. I agree with you. It's surprising neither got a look, but, you know, a couple more coaching changes and all of a sudden you have that domino effect that can ripple down. So don't speak too quickly yet.
Yeah, I certainly think both guys have new jobs for the 2020 season. They should stick out 2019, I imagine, at this point. But I think 2020, both of those guys wind up going somewhere else. One more bowl game here for Saturday, and then we'll transition to the college basketball side of things for a little bit. Louisiana Tech and Hawaii. Hawaii at home for the Hawaii Bowl, but only a 1-point favorite here. And up until this season, Hawaii's home field advantage had not been very much at all. In fact, with what I did to calculate my home field advantage numbers for this year, I was only giving Hawaii 2 points of home field edge because, yeah, it's a long travel, but they weren't covering numbers. They weren't even winning they weren't even winning straight up in a lot of cases. So I really watered down their home field advantage. It appears to be quite watered down in this game.
Well, you know, because you don't have the travel effect when you're playing Mountain West games and you only have 7 days between games. It is a negative to make that long trip. You know, here you don't have that. The kids are there in plenty of time. They take a couple days off. They're going to the best bowl destination there is, unless you're in the playoffs. So to me, you know, it's really a positive for the road team. You look at Hawaii, and you talked about their numbers. Well, they're 7-19-1 ATS at home their last 27 games. And as a favorite, Hawaii is 3-15 against the spread. La Tech is a team that clearly has the best player on the field. You have a defensive lineman who's going to be in the NFL, Sack Daddy Ferguson, 15 sacks, probably going to be a number one pick. You know, I will take Skip Holtz in a bowl. He's 4-0 straight up, 3-1 ATS. If I'm going to get Skip Holtz in a bowl, I'm going to take it. Now, I don't give USF, I downgraded because they're playing in their home facility. When you're Hawaii, you know, unless you have that special, special season, you know, like they had a couple years ago where they had 12 wins, unless you have that season, you know your bowl destination is the Y Bowl. You can't afford to go anywhere else. So, you know, you don't have that negative because you've reached your goal of getting here. You know, you had 8 wins, and prior to the season, I think Hawaii's over-under on the season was 3. They shocked the world with the run and shoot that Colorado State game week 1A, you know, and then moving on, they had that lull in the middle. So I think they're happy where they are. They won their final games to get to 8 wins. I think an 8-win Hawaii team is better than anyone on that staff or team hoped for. And in this situation, I think I'm certainly backing Holtz.
Well, and you look at this game, and one of the interesting arguments about bowl season is, you know, do you want a team that's playing really well coming into it that's going to stay focused throughout, you know, the bowl prep period, or do you want a team that's not playing well? Louisiana Tech did not play well down the stretch. They got blown away in Stark Vegas against Mississippi State 45-3, only beat Rice 28-13, and Rice was terrible again this year. Lost to Southern Miss 21-20, then lost at home on Senior Day to Western Kentucky, who only had 3 wins, fired their head coach, and they got doubled up in that game 30-15. So is that a positive for you for Louisiana Tech here, the way that they played down the stretch?
Well, the thing I think when you look at it, I think the defense is going to play well. And you had an offense, and Jamar Smith, I mean, really struggled. You know, he had a 14-9 ratio, only completed 57%. And it's a team that just didn't have an offense going, and it showed it. So, you know, now you have some excitement. You know, remember Holtz from the East Carolina days and things he would do in bowl games. And when you get to bowl practices, you're refreshed. When you start running some double reverses and flea flickers and trick plays, that can reignite an offense that has been very stagnant, playing poorly. So to me, it's really, I look at it as the first start to next season, and they're going to have a lot of kids back. You know, the other thing to look at is, remember, more so when we get to the later bowls, you know, with the redshirt rule this year, your better coaches that run practices better are going to be using some freshmen that would never have been able to play in the past, but with the 4-game rule, and it doesn't matter when they are, you're going to see some kids that are exciting that have never played. Hawaii played a lot of freshmen because they had a young team. La Tech didn't. So you may see some of those kids working into the mix.
All right, we'll move over to the college basketball side here. And one thing I want to mention as a follow-up from yesterday's show, we talked with Kyle Hunter about the spot for Florida A&M. They played in Salt Lake City last night against Utah, lost by 29. Utah did cover every number that was out there. I think they were close to 21-point favorite. Tonight, Florida A&M plays at Oregon, and in fact, it's a 3 p.m. local time tip-off. So it's a 21-hour turnaround, I believe, for Florida A&M with travel from Salt Lake City up to Eugene. That lines up from 25 to 27 now, but probably the worst spot I've ever seen in college for the Florida A&M Rattlers. So I just wanted to update that here on today's show. Rolf, did you have anything you wanted to add to that one?
You know, my favorite spot, you know, in that same scenario used to be the Mountain West Conference tournaments. And what happens was in the Missouri Valley Conference, the number one seed didn't play the first day. and the worst seed played at 8 o'clock at night, and then had a play at 11 a.m. the next day. So it was about a 12-hour, less, just over 12-hour turnaround when the worst seed in the Missouri Valley had to play the number one seed. It was gold for about 9 straight years. The line has adjusted accordingly since, but, you know, those are rare instances. You know, in fact, I played almost against the situation last night. Northern Colorado played at San Diego three nights ago, and then last night at against the hectic New Mexico State. When you're on these breaks like this, and, you know, we'll talk about the home edge, it's very tough to play those couple days because you haven't played probably in 7 or 8 days, and then all of a sudden back-to-back days, your legs aren't quite used to it. In fact, Florida A&M, prior to playing Utah, their previous game was 8 days ago against Georgia Tech on the road. So I completely agree. It's a situation, but, you know, again, the line has clearly adjusted because of it now.
So as I'm scrolling through the ESPN schedule page here today, tickets for that Florida A&M Oregon game can be had on the third-party website for $2. Appalachian State Georgetown, tickets available for $2. At Value City Arena tonight in Columbus, tickets are $4. Albany and Providence, $2 will get you in the door. Drexel and UConn, $7 will get you in the door. Xavier and Missouri, pretty decent game there, $3 to get in the building there in Columbia. So what does that tell you? Well, attendance is going to be down a little bit here with everything that's going on. Students are on break. The holidays are coming up. You know, you're going to have some lesser home court advantages, to say the least. Well, how much do you cut yours down?
I cut it by about a point, maybe a little bit more, depending on the situation. Now, I did, this isn't the same scenario. I did run before the show a query on teams that haven't played in 7 days and then are playing again, because most teams had a 7 or 8 day break because of finals. A couple teams played here or there. You saw the week schedules, the very light schedules we had. And I will say this, I was sort of surprised. Everything fit, every scenario, a home favorite, a home dog, a small home favorite, a big home favorite, everything fit from 47% to 53% in that situation of having 7 days or more off. So if you think, you know, a lot of times I look and I prefer, again, I don't have any numbers to back this up with defensive efficiencies, but after a 7 or 8 day break, I think it's easier to get your defense back into mid-season form than it is an offense, especially the teams that shoot the threes. So when we look at these situations and the breaks, I do tend to lean with road teams and with defensive teams.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I certainly agree, you know, because you got to get your offensive timing down, your offensive spacing. You got to get back into rhythm with your shot in game conditions. And, you know, it's always interesting. I mean, last night we had a spot, you know, Arizona State played 2 nights ago against Georgia, but that game took a lot out of them. They were down by 18, came back to win it. Then they play with 1 day rest against Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt just kind of out-muscled them in that game last night, closed a 1.5-point favorite, won by 16, game stayed well under the total. But, you know, that was one where, you know, maybe the break helped Vanderbilt, but largely because of the spot that Arizona State was in more than anything. So it is interesting to sort of, you know, try and determine what matters the most here at this time of the year.
Yeah, and you have to remember, I mean, that Arizona State was not a good game, even though they played. You remember Vanderbilt lost their best player to injury, their point guard ACL, a couple games prior. So Vanderbilt was a team trying to find its transition. And, you know, Vanderbilt was a team that was on a 12-day layoff. They had played Middle Tennessee on December the 5th, Wednesday the 5th. They beat them 79-51. And then they're playing 12 days later, Monday the 17th. So I don't really remember. I'm sure there's only a handful of times where a team hasn't played a game in 12 days. That didn't even catch my eye till right now while we're speaking.
The only reason I know is because I wrote up a preview over at bangthebook.com for it. I suggested the first half under, which did come through in that one nicely, because of, you know, that layoff. I mean, like you said, I think that you have to sort of look towards defensive teams and look towards unders a little bit with a long layoff. So that could be a betting angle that people want to look into here. You know, during the finals period, maybe you kind of missed the boat a little bit on it for this year, but certainly for next year. And of course, you know, we will have some long holiday layoffs as well that you know, maybe can kind of fit that system. But Rolf, I know one thing that you wanted to talk about here, and this is something that's gotten a little bit of run on Twitter this week, because there have been some AP voters that refuse to vote for teams that haven't played a true road game, which I think is asinine. It's not their fault that they haven't played a true road game. But we've got three teams here tonight, another one on Wednesday, a handful on Saturday, and then a few after the Christmas holiday, playing their first true road games. Who are some of those teams, and what do those spots mean to you?
Well, I do look to fade teams that haven't played their first road game. I did have a typo. I sent out a tweet today. If you don't follow, please do Cal Sports at Cal Sports LV. I do a lot of trends, a lot of angles tweets, and I don't give many personal opinions. I just sort of give information. I had Auburn against NC State tonight. That is actually Wednesday. But tonight, San Jose and USF play at Stanford and FIU. And those are two teams that I was shocked. I had to double check, because normally your blue bloods, the teams that don't need to raise basketball capital, schedule their tournaments, have a couple neutral settings, have their home games, and their first road games may not start until conference play. But San Jose just shocked the heck out of me, being a Mountain West team that I'm sure doesn't have money for their basketball program, yet making their first true road game. USF, again, at FIU tonight. And then we have Auburn and UCLA on Wednesday. They're playing at NC State and Cincinnati. On Saturday, Boston College, Clemson, and Kansas playing DePaul, South Carolina, and Arizona State. Kentucky, first road start, December 29th at Louisville. Connecticut, Texas, and Texas Tech, January 2nd. West Virginia, January 5th. And the final team to play a true road game, January the 8th. Duke will go to Wake Forest. January 8th, your first true road game.
Well, and I think what's fascinating is the last five teams you mentioned, UConn, Texas, Texas Tech, West Virginia, and Duke, their first true road game is a conference game, which is remarkable to think about. And, you know, could be a very obvious angle. Obviously, for Texas, it would help for Kansas State to get Wade back in that game. But, you know, I mean, that's a very different environment, playing the day after New Year's Day on the road in a conference game that actually means something. I mean, yeah, these students will still be on break and all that, but still, that is remarkable. And also, you know, San Jose State, I mean, this is a basketball program that I think it was, what, 2 or 3 years ago, they were trying to get kids from the football team to walk onto the basketball team because they didn't have enough players to actually play. They were running out there with some games no subs at all. For them to not get some paycheck games, that kind of stuns me. But the one that stands the most to me, UCLA tomorrow night, first true road game in the Queen City in Cincinnati. That's a long way away from home.
Oh, yeah, and especially the struggles UCLA has. And I'll tell you what, Cincy's offense has been absolutely pitiful, but their defense is in midseason form. So Cincinnati will be a little fired up. They're off a loss to Mississippi State. They only scored 59 points on the road. Back at home, where they beat Xavier by 15, beat Northern Kentucky by 13, and they'll be ready to play. They only have South Carolina State on deck Saturday, so they have nothing that they have to worry about in the future. All hands on deck for Mick Cronin and his crew.
Well, and I think the amazing thing is that, you know, you look at this spot for UCLA, and they're coming all the way out to Cincinnati, and then they're playing Ohio in a neutral site game in Chicago. So, you know, that I think obviously the first road game is a challenging one. That one's not a true road game with the game being in Chicago. But, you know, you're away from home now for an extended period of time for the first time this season. That's a little bit of a shock to the system, too.
Well, and not only are you away from home, you're playing by far the best defense you ever faced. Cincinnati right now about number 15 in efficiency defense. So, you know, they played Michigan State here in Vegas at the Orleans and only scored 67 points against them. And, you know, I think you're going to see a total here in the, you know, in the 130s for that game tomorrow.
Well, and one other thing I'll mention with you here, I know you like to do a lot of situational handicapping, and maybe I'm stealing one of the plays that you want to mention here on the show from a situational handicapping standpoint. Tonight, you've got Butler laying over 20 against Presbyterian off of that big loss against Indiana. Tomorrow, you've got Tennessee taking on Samford, a Samford team that already has 10 wins, has played a really weak schedule, but Tennessee coming off of wins over Gonzaga and Memphis. So some really interesting situational spots this week, not related to teams playing road games or the schedule.
Well, I'll tell you what, Samford may have played a weak schedule, but they're 10-1 against the spread. They're the only team right now to have 10 ATS wins. Other top ATS teams, Ole Miss 9-1, Oklahoma 9-1. I think the Sooners are now learning how to play as a team instead of playing behind one man. Liberty 7-1, San Fran, a team I really like, 7-1-2, and Drake 7-1 against the spread.
All right, so let's talk about that then. Hopefully I didn't steal your thunder. Like I said, with the situational play, it seems like there's a lot of good situational angles out here for this week. Have you narrowed it down to one that you really like here to mention to our listeners on the show?
Yeah, well, obviously the reason I tweeted out the first true road game, because I was looking at one of them, and that's just I'm looking to fade USF. I'm going to play on FIU today. FIU, a solid team. USF traveling for the first time. The Bulls are very excited the way they're playing. They're off to one of their best starts. They have 8 wins, and now they're going to play a team that, you know, you think, well, we lost to FIU because you have revenge, and I don't put anything into that. You have revenge because you lost to FIU last year because you were a lousy 10-22 team that lost on the road, so I don't put anything into it. Again, your home games – you have not played a team in the top 100. The best team you've played was Georgetown in a neutral setting, and you lost that game. The second best team you've played this year was either Colgate or Ohio, depending on your ratings. FIU, again, Jeremy Ballard has them playing very well, 8-2 this year. They are up and down the field. They are the fastest or second fastest tempo team you have. USF wants to slow it down. I think FIU can control the tempo at home, and I like the Panthers tonight.
All right, now I know that you usually like to give out a technical play on the show as well. I don't know if you've got one of those queued up or not, but if you do, I'd certainly like to hear who you're looking at.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, Oklahoma, one of the top ATS teams this year. They're 6-0 ATS at home as well as on the season. Creighton 3-12 ATS on the road. And again, I really like the way the Sooners are playing. I think it's a team where, you know, last year it was all or nothing with them. A 17 win season with Trey Young, 18 win season, I believe, actually. But this year, 9-1, solid wins over Notre Dame and Dayton and USC. Your only loss this year was to Wisconsin in a neutral setting. I don't think that's going to bother you. You know, Creighton's had a couple tough defeats as well. Home losses to Ohio State and Gonzaga, nothing to be embarrassed about. A road loss at Nebraska, nothing to be embarrassed about. But now I think Oklahoma has the solid offense and defense. And Creighton is a team that is very good offensively, not so good defensively. And I think that the Sooners win that game.
One other thing I want to ask you about is I'm looking at the schedule here for the rest of the week. Tomorrow on Wednesday, we've got Marist versus New Hampshire playing at 11 a.m. Thursday, Maryland Eastern Shore, Winthrop at 11, Canisius and Holy Cross at 2. At 3, Chicago State and Western Illinois. You go ahead to Friday, whole bunch of early games there on Friday. Dartmouth and Bryan, you've got St. Bonaventure, or Dartmouth and Bryant, excuse me. St. Bonaventure and Northeastern, Binghamton and LIU Brooklyn. A lot of added games here, but early starts. Any betting angles that you see from those types of games with, you know, these weekday early starts because these kids don't have class?
I don't. There's nothing I have found or nothing I've discovered, not that there isn't, but I have not come up with anything where they are. Obviously, I do look very closely when people are playing tournaments and you may have a 3 or a 4 hour edge and you're playing back-to-back games. I think that's very important. But when both teams are playing, you know, I think it's just the team that can respond better. You're playing at a time where your body clock is not used to playing. These are kids that stay up late and study, and games are at night, and they travel back and forth. So, you know, it's nothing that I have an answer for that I handicap any differently when there's daytime games than nighttime games.
All right, fair enough. Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Rolf?
You know what? Just getting in the holiday season, bowl packages at WagerTalk, the daily NBA stat sheet, and just, again, follow a Twitter, at CalSportsLV.
Rolf, appreciate the time as always, man. Hope you feel better. Hope you and yours enjoy the Christmas holiday next week, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time here.
Adam, thanks. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all our listeners.
There you go. There's Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com, and again, at CalSportsLV on Twitter. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, should have Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds joining us tomorrow. If not, we'll figure out some different guests there, but I'm almost positive Brian will join us, and I'll check in with Wes earlier here and not give him late notice. Thursday, Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, Super Contest segment, and Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Going to try to put something up for you on Monday morning here with Kyle Hunter. excuse me. But definitely no show next Tuesday on the Christmas holiday. And then we'll see what happens with the New Year's holiday. Obviously, New Year's Eve on Monday night, and then a whole bunch of stuff going on Tuesday. So probably no show the next two Tuesdays. I'll see if I can get Rolf and Brian to maybe join us a different day or something like that. But in any event, we'll do everything we can to get as much Bang the Book Radio content out there for the holiday season as possible. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.